This episode of Voices of the Elephant is brought to you by SiteGround. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Voices of the Elephant. My name is Cal Evans. I'm your host, and my special guest today is Oscar Merida. Merida. Okay. I could keep guessing. I wasn't going to get that. So, and I have the hardest time typing your Twitter handle too. I have to look it up every time, just because I never can remember it right. Oscar, thank you for being a guest today. Hey, in a little bit, we're going to talk about our sponsor, SiteGround.com. But I just want to give them a shout out and say thank you for sponsoring Voices of the Elephant. Oscar, you came on the scene a few years ago. You might have been around, but I don't remember running into you at conferences. Some of my guests I've had on, you know, I can remember running into them at conferences 10, 12 years ago. But you just kind of appeared, and you're part of PHP Architect and Musketeers Me. Tell us how you got into PHP in PHP programming, or tell us, as I like to call it, your hero backstory.
Okay, sure. I actually go pretty way back working with PHP because I remember the PHP 4 release back in 2000 at my first job. Yeah. So out of school, I went to work at a web agency here in Alexandria. I'm near DC. Mm-hmm. And they were using PHP 3 and a combination of Perl and some homegrown scripts. But then when 4 came out, that pretty much became our go-to language. Then 8 years after doing the web agency thing, I went to work at DC United, the sports soccer team here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we moved all their digital properties into Drupal, and then the league followed suit a year after that. That was a fun project. I got to work with Keith and Marco, and that was my, like, first big connection with the greater PHP community.
Although I remember that project because they were finishing that up as I joined PHP Architect.
Yeah, that was fun because we had to be live when the season launched. So March something, it was just crazy. Work real hard and make sure everything that you could get done before then to go live. There was a hard launch date.
Mm-hmm. Those are always fun.
Yeah, and I'd been involved with the DCPHP group. I'd like even presented once or twice before that. Sandy was the organizer at the time. We were coworkers. We went to Tech 10 together. Kept in touch. I was pretty shy at Tech 10 because like I pretty much just hung out with Sandy, and I didn't know.
I was going to say because I was there and I don't remember you at all. So
no, yeah. I mean, there was also the DCPHP conference here, that I recall now.
Yeah, I remember that. That was one that I was supposed to go to, and I had to back out for personal reasons, like 2 weeks before. But I remember a lot of interesting tweets coming out of that, speakers having to wait in line like 3 hours for hotel rooms and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. I remember watching a presentation by Eli, who was at Dig then, and he got me my first blue elephant, just random. He had some to give away.
Very cool.
My first elephant there. After DC United, Sandy and Eli were actually working together at Mojo Live. And they needed to bring another developer. And that's when the three of us started working together along with Kevin. Very shortly thereafter, that flamed out. Through no fault of our own, buy me a beer at a conference, you can get the full backstory. And we decided
that's for everybody else. I've already paid my dues and got the full backstory. And it cost me more than a beer to get that one. So.
Yeah, when you walk into work and the boss goes, "Yeah, we have no money." Interesting times. But that led to the four of us deciding we wanted to keep working together and we could kind of do our own thing.
Cool.
Consulting or coaching. That's how Musketeers Me started.
Mm-hmm.
And Eli had always been really active in the community presenting. He knew Marco really well, PHP Architect. Marco was, I think, looking for his next adventure, wanted to do something different, and Eli and him hashed out the deal where we took over PHP Architect.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yep. That's pretty much brings us to the present day, where now we've got tech going for 5 years. Beth was with us, and I started helping her out with the magazine. And by started helping her out, it really just means like she would send into our chat room, like, "Hey, here's what this article is going to look like," and I would like point out little typos or little layout issues, like, "Oh, the numbers aren't consistent." Which got me onto the editorial crew, and then I just took over once she moved on.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, y'all are doing a great job. I got to work on PHP Architect before you, and although I didn't do that much with the magazine other than writing for it, I was in charge of training and worked heavily in the conferences, but the magazine was basically Beth's area, and we all stepped very carefully when we needed to go into Beth's area. She had that thing running, and we just didn't want to mess with it.
Totally. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Beth publishing Tyler, a magazine was interesting. I had a little bit of background in that I worked for a company that published a quarterly magazine back in the late 80s, early 90s, but it was a trade publication. It was given away for free. And so, but I had a little bit of experience, but then getting back into it at PHP Architect, it was very, very interesting. And I got reminded how difficult it can be to work with people who, really well-meaning people that really want to hit the deadlines that you give them. And for some reason, they just swoosh right by.
Yeah, real life has a habit of doing that to the best intentions. And I'm lucky in that I've got enough irons in the fire that if a few slip, it means I'll just have content later. And so that keeps me sane.
Well, that was the lesson I learned from Beth was you always have more content planned than you actually need because somebody's going to slip. And I even do that when I'm planning day camp for developers and stuff like that. I when I send out the initial invitations, I always invite more people than I actually need, and 99% of the time, everything's fine because at least one of my speakers can't do it. This last one, it bit me in the rear end, and I had everybody agreed to it, and I had to cancel somebody, so that's never fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but see, I've got a limited amount of space. You don't. So, the magazine can go larger if it needs to by one article. Day camp can't. So, but yeah, that was one of the lessons I learned from Beth. And like I said, she ran a tight ship there, and we had a lot of fun working on the magazine and working on the books. Now, you also publish books. You have moved into that area. We've not moved in. We had the books before, but you've really expanded the book offering. And thank God you have you've sunset my original Zen Framework 1 book. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I think it just comes along with publishing the magazine. We use Markdown and Pandoc and a bunch of glue scripts to get it all together. So reusing that to publish books is kind of a no-brainer. And it's fun to work with authors on that stuff too, which is a little long-term. You get to know them a little better and dive deeper into the topics and then give them some useful feedback if I can.
Very cool. Well, so that's how you got involved in it. And honestly, I had no idea that you had that deep of a connection to PHP. That's wonderful. But now you're publishing, and we'll talk about publishing and books and all that in a little bit. But you've gotten involved in conferences. And I don't know why, but nobody from PHP Architect was involved in a podcast that I did not too long ago called What Conference Organizers Wish Speakers Knew, and it's wholly my fault. I'm sure that I just absolutely forgot to invite y'all, and which is oversight on my part. But tell us a little bit about conferences, something you've learned, and tell us at least one thing that you want speakers at your conference to know about the CFP process.
Okay, I'll give you one thing for speakers and one for wannabe speakers or aspiring speakers. For the
Okay.
speakers, I think they should know that the review process is not personal. You know, we get 500-600 submissions that we have to review usually like within a week because we want to usually get a schedule out and acceptance and rejection letters as soon as we can. So it's not personal, but professionalism counts, right? If it's not personal in that it's blind, and then I mean, I don't dock people who I know or don't know or give bonus points. That's what I mean by it's not personal. But, you know, make sure your spelling is correct. Make sure you have a good title. If you've presented it before, give us that feedback. Let us know how you'll update it, change it. So I think that's the most important thing that I would tell speakers is, you know, it your title and your abstract, that's your impression. And unless you have joined in links or recorded talk that we can watch, that's all we have to go on. So put some effort into them. And I'd rather get a few quality submissions from a speaker than like, here's the 15 talks I have in my talk list. You know, go ahead and pick the ones you like. It's like eventually when you start seeing the same or see a person really frequently in the review process, you start to wonder what their expertise is, what they really want to present on, what's going to be the good one, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I wrote a blog post something about that. You know, to me, when I was running conferences, and I don't do it that much anymore, but the ideal number I want to see is 5 or 6 from you, maximum. Minimum of 2, because if I pick you, I usually need to pick a second talk from you. But I don't want to see 10 or 12, because at some point I just start to get fatigue. And you know, and you're right. If you're a jack of all trades, you're a master of none. And I'm really looking for the masters when I'm selecting talks.
Yeah, when I see like the 8th submission from someone, and it's not even a topic that the conference really revolves around, it's kind of disheartening because you're like, why am I reviewing all these 600 when you know a third or a tenth of them, whatever it might be, didn't even bother to read the CFP and kind of tailor it a little bit.
Yeah, that's another excellent point. So what advice do you have for wannabe speakers, people who are looking to get their first talk accepted?
Don't let your imposter syndrome stop you from submitting. I've been submitting I don't submit as frequently as I should probably, but I've only gotten accepted to speak at Northeast PHP once. And it's not for lack of trying, but don't think that just because you've never spoken before or someone else has already done a presentation on X that you don't bring something valuable to the table.
Yeah, excellent advice.
Thanks. Yes, you see on Twitter a lot, like, I don't know what I would present on, or X already does presentations on this topic, so why should I submit? You know, a lot of times, especially from the organizer's perspective, at least myself, and I can probably speak for the PHP Architect crew, it's like, we don't want to see the same faces speaking at our conferences every year. You know, we want to bring in new folks. And because we found the conferences have been a great way to integrate and introduce people to the PHP community, actually.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, and that's a good point. Don't let the point of view is important. Everybody knows that Derek wrote the book on date time because he wrote date time and, you know, he published the book on it. But if you've got a unique angle on date time, how you use date time to do something interesting or something different, you know, that's going to be equally as important as just learning date time. So, yeah, don't let the I don't know this thing backwards and forwards, or I don't know, you know, I'm not Derek, so I can't speak on date time. And I'm picking on Derek because Derek and I are friends, and he knows I love him. But, you know, it could be anybody. There's a handful of speakers out there that are the recognized authorities, and I'm doing the air quotes. Don't be afraid to talk in those areas, but give a different point of view.
Yeah, I mean...
Go ahead.
Everyone's experiences can be a little different, so the way you or I might present a topic like front-end testing is going to be totally different than someone else. That
oh,
might
yeah,
resonate better
my
with...
answer is, my presentation on that is just going to be two words, don't bother. No, I'm kidding. That's a joke, kids, okay? Don't take that for serious.
You're trying to make someone grumpy.
Oh, good one. Well played, sir. Okay. Hey, let's take a break just for a second and talk about our sponsor, SiteGround. See, every website needs hosting, but not all hosts are the same. Now, if you're looking for a solid and secure host for your website, your web application, or your web store, check out SiteGround. They're rock-solid technical people. They're easy to work with when it comes to support, but most important, they're fun people to be around. I mean, if you run into them at WordCamp or PHP Tech or PHP World or any of the other conferences, they either do put sponsor with a booth or put swag in there. Make sure you stop by and talk to them if you find any of them. And, of course, when you do, make sure you pick up a pair of socks because they have got the killer socks. If you talk to them, though, make sure you tell them that you heard it on Voices of the Elephant. More importantly, though, when you're ready to select a host for your next web app, check them out. You can find more information about them at siteground.com. Okay, we talked a little bit about this already, but let's dive a little bit deeper into this. You're now in publishing. Now, is PHP Architect your first foray into the publishing world?
Does being on the newspaper in high school count?
No, not at all.
Yeah, then it is my first.
That's it. Well, okay. Tell me, what was the most surprising thing that you learned when you took over the magazine? And you do the magazine and all the publishing. That's your role, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What was the most surprising thing you learned when you took it over?
The most surprising thing I learned was just how tricky it can be to explain something in writing so that it's clear for other people to understand. So it's important to write a draft, and when I'm writing and helping other people write, the first piece of advice I would give them is like, just capture all that stream of thought in your text editor, right? Get it all down. But you have to be able to come back and then make sure you're not making any assumptions about what the reader might know if they're familiar with a topic or not. These are kind of like the things I look for when I'm editing an article or mm-hmm. a book chapter. Include links for further reading. Basically, you have one shot at someone understanding what you're explaining. Because if you did a poor job, rereading your poor job of paragraphs is not going to help. So you got to make sure you're clear. You've got good examples at work. You haven't made any assumptions about what the reader might know. Like nowadays, we can assume most people know what Composer is. But maybe a year or two ago, you would have to say like, okay, if we're going to use Composer, you got to go install it from here. This is what it does. Have that little stock paragraph in it.
Yeah.
So the whole editing process, I had never been super exposed to beyond like writing classes in high school and college. So critiquing and looking for those ways to improve the text have been the most surprising for me.
Interesting. Let's geek out a little bit because I love publishing. I do some self-publishing, and you're using some tools that I use, but I use them very poorly. You use Pandoc and Markdown to create your the books and the magazine, but I know there's a lot of pre-processing and post-processing that goes on because I know what Pandoc takes in and I know what it spits out, and it doesn't always spit out what you expect it to. What's your workflow like? I mean, how does the author get you the articles, and what's your workflow like for publishing a magazine or a book, either one?
Okay, they're both pretty similar because we, like you said, use Markdown as the basis. So there's some guidelines on PHP Architect or phparch.com about how exactly we use it, but we don't stray very far from what Pandoc supports, honestly. Mm. So an author will send me their article or their book, and the article is just one Markdown file. For a book, each chapter is a Markdown file. And we do some post-processing to like have the listings, any code listings and images as separate files. I take that markdown, and usually I put it on a tool called Draftin, which is a collaborative markdown editor.
Oh,
and
nice.
I found that it's when I can't, sometimes I've used, like with you, we use the Google Docs. They have really good commenting features for editing. Draftin kind of gives you a similar workflow, but it's native markdown. So in there, I'll review and leave comments for the article, for the author. You know, you should explain this. You mentioned X, but you should probably mention Y as well, that kind of stuff. And then the cool thing with Draftin is behind the scenes, it uses, I think, Git. So when the author makes their changes, I kind of get a pull request in a sense, because I can see the diff of their edits, and I can make sure that they addressed any concerns.
As opposed to me, when I submit mine and dare you to make any changes to it. No, I'm kidding.
That leads us into the next step. Is once the authors made their changes, I hand it over to Kara Ferguson. We've been using her for I think a year now. It'll be a year this fall as our copy editor, and she'll clarify some things better. She's really good at asking questions as well. She's not just checking for spelling and grammar. And I know she handles you and some other folks pretty well too.
Yes, she is absolutely a no-nonsense editor, doesn't take crap from me, even though I give it to her all the time. But she's one of the best I've ever worked with, and she does editing on all my books and any big articles that I write these days go through her.
Yep, same here. She does all our books too, so KaraFerguson.net. If anyone is looking for a copy editor, I would highly recommend her.
Highly,
yeah.
Well worth the money.
Totally. She gets that to me, and then I put it in our repo, and there's some tools we wrote that will spit out the ICML file that goes into InDesign, which I'll explain.
Oh, okay.
And it'll also build the EPUB and MOBI files that people can download if they don't want the PDF. So to make the PDF is like our pretty print layout of the magazine. Mm-hmm. Pandoc will generate an ICML file, which is Adobe's like really weirdly documented spec for importing content into InDesign and then doing the layout in there. So putting in two columns, flowing pictures around stuff, and adding the listings in their little graphical treatment. So that's probably the most labor-intensive. Beyond the editing is like knowledge brain-intensive.
Yeah.
Then putting the stuff in InDesign and putting like the ads in and the pictures, that's the most labor-intensive part of it. It usually takes me 3 or 4 days to lay out a magazine issue from start to finish. And that's pretty much the flow. After that, there's a lot of like supporting stuff to get an issue on the website and make sure that all the subscribers get it. But that's a whole another set of tools.
Oh yeah, and they used to let me monkey with those tools. Yeah. That was the one area that I managed was the mailing list, and I think Eli has cursed me publicly several times for the. The processes that he inherited from me, and I really hope he's streamlined them by now. All I can say was, at the time, it seemed like a good idea.
We still have that massive view, SQL views thing that runs, but I've started setting up webhooks to listen for subscribes and unsubscribes, so that's going to be my summer project, actually.
Yeah. Much better solution. At the time, either they didn't have it at the time or I didn't know how to use them at the time. What he's talking about, for those of you who have not actually worked at PHP Architect, Eli inherited this massive SQL statement that when I was there would take 8 to 10 minutes just to run before it would do anything. It just had to crunch for 8 or 10 minutes before it would do anything, and it was to keep the mailing list in sync with MailChimp. So, and it was just a god-awful ugly piece of SQL. In my defense, the very first version of it took over an hour to run, so I did get it down to 8 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it was bad.
And for those listening, this is why a lot of places will have that unsubscribes may take up to 24 hours to process.
Oh, yeah.
Disclaimer. Because it's probably some batch script that's running each night that's syncing like some in-house database with their mailing list provider.
Yeah, because as soon as you get more than one system running and you've got to start tracking those unsubscribes across multiple systems, then you are going to set up webhooks or some kind of batch system or something to synchronize them and just hope that they stay synchronized. So that's always the fun part. I remember I missed one a couple of times. We missed a couple of unsubscribes one time, and people just get great if they, you know, if you send them an email and they have requested an unsubscribe, and I guarantee you 99 times it's not on purpose. It's just that something went wrong, but people get upset. Of course, I'm guilty of that too, so I really can't point fingers.
It's
something we all do.
It certainly made me more understanding being on the other side of things.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, Oscar, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here on Voices of the Elephant. It's been a really interesting part of it for me. Has been a walk down memory lane, but I hope our listeners have gotten some idea of all the fun stuff that PHP Architect does. Hey, before I let you go, same two questions to ask everybody. What's your local user group and what's the URL?
Our local user group is DCPHP, and the URL is dcphp.net. But they're way more active on Meetup if you're looking for them. That's where they post events and RSVPs and that kind of stuff.
Okay. I'll throw a link to both of them on the show notes so that people can see both of them. Oscar, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate it. And thank you to you and Eli and Sandy and who am I missing?
Kevin,
thank you.
Heather too.
He's going to hit me for that. And Heather, I had Heather in the list. I just knew there was one other person that I couldn't, that I had not mentioned. Thank you for all the things that y'all do for the PHP community, because you put on three wonderful conferences with the Coder Cruise now. You put out a magazine, some great books. You do training. You do a lot for us.
Thanks. I enjoyed being on here. But I should clarify, Coder Cruise is not a PHP Architect thing. Eli will stomp me if that impression gets out there. That's totally a one-for-all events. And it's a polyglot conference, too. So
that's true. Okay.
That's why it's
I won't link to that in the show notes then, because I don't want Eli to get... No, I'm kidding.
we already got it in the audio, so that's okay.
Yeah. But thank you for all that y'all do for the PHP community.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.